Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
I mean, I certainly knew that there was something about Richard Simmons that was like similar vibe. But...
Well, hey there, kitten. It's That's a Gay Ass Podcast, and I'm your host, Eric Williams, on this gorgeous Wednesday in October. My neck hurts from just bobbing it up and down, listening to Peppermint this week. It's just like her brilliance. We do laugh, but we also have a lot of deep convo in this episode, and man... My neck is also hurting for other reasons. It's probably because it's just tired of carrying around all the anxious thoughts that are swirling in my head. I guess we'll transition this into a quick segment of...
Me, myself, and it's just all right.
Yeah, I don't know, y'all. I think it's situational where I have a ton of things going on in a row that are just like, I went to a wedding, my parents visited New York, I have some exciting podcast interviews, I am going to LA literally all at the time of this podcast. You're listening to this podcast while I'm hunting down apartments in Los Angeles tomorrow morning. From the time I'm recording this, I'm flying very early to LA, and then we're going to literally just hop off that plane and look at apartments. So... I'm not sure if I'll be doing updates on social media or if I'll just be so anxious that I can't even look at anything else besides the listings. But that's why this SSRI thing is coming up, because I'm just like, maybe it's just situational stress that it's just too much for a pill to overcome. But it's not really working the way that I would like it to in this situation, in this moment of my life. I took half of a Klonopin to help me sleep two nights ago. And Matt told me that I was speaking loudly a lot of the night. And then at one point I said, I dropped something. And I crawled over him and started searching the floor. Meanwhile, there was nothing on the floor. And he kept saying, Eric, what are you doing? And I wouldn't respond to him. And then Matt said he got so frustrated that it was taking so long after he realized I was just doing crazy shit in my sleep. He fell asleep while I was on top of him searching for a ghost object on the ground. So that's where I'm at. But I mean, like, I know that we're gonna find a great apartment, and there's a lot of excitement ahead. So speaking of excitement ahead, Peppermint is the guest on this week's podcast. Obviously, you know Peppermint from RuPaul's Drag Race, so many videos and collaborations with Bob the Drag Queen. She was on Broadway in Head Over Heels. We have so many great conversations that range from like deep shit, like this last week's episode when Gus, we talked about high schools doing musicals with different races that maybe did not go along with the original intention of the script. I asked Peppermint her thoughts about that. We talk about the article coming out about a lot of Jewish characters are not played by Jews. I asked Peppermint about Laura Osnes and the vaccine thing. I don't know. This is just a hot take episode, and Peppermint is so incredible. If you don't follow her, you absolutely should. I linked her socials. She has an amazing short film coming out that I'm going to also link in the show notes. And please, if you're here from the gorgeous Peppermint, so happy to have you. Hit that subscribe button if you would like. We have unbelievable guests coming up, including one that is I told the Patreon folks about it because I wanted to give them the heads up to submit questions. So speaking of, if you want to go get the heads up on who that next guest is, it's patreon.com/gayasspodcast. And you can follow me at Eric Wills for all the hot takes there. Enjoy this episode with Miss Peppermint. You look stunning today. How is your day going? Are you enjoying this gorgeous fall weather? How are we?
I am. Are you on the East Coast as well?
I am. I'm in New York City.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I haven't been outside yet today, but I'm going to after this, and it's beautiful.
I saw that you were talking to Bob, and you're having like a vacation house moment. Is that upstate, you said?
Yeah.
What a dream.
Well, it's not my house, so I'm not there yet.
Sure.
But it was beautiful to have and go to. I just rent properties wherever to escape, especially during and after the pandemic. I was like, get me out of here. You know, my apartment's nice size, but it's not as big as it. It's not like you can live here and not leave for the whole year, pandemic style, you know?
Listen, my husband and I live in a one bedroom. We both work from home, and it's just, it tests a whole bunch of things there, Peppermint, but we've learned, we are learning and listening, and we do put up notes, app apologies to each other when we do mess up. I do want to say, though, I was watching all of these Broadway clips, and I was watching the Head Over Heels stuff, and I saw that show. I thought it was so effing good. All the choreography is incredible. Your looks are so good in the show. First of all, when you got into this Broadway production, were you always a theater person growing up, or was this like a newfound dream that you kind of realized as you were growing?
Well, I was always very theatrical, for sure. And I always did like school plays and drama club and things like that growing up. And I went to college for musical theater for performance. So that's what my one and only degree is in. And so obviously most of my work is in drag. And
right.
So I didn't, you know, have the chance to really, I mean, there just weren't roles like that when I was in college and when I left school and when I was really focused primarily on like Broadway, you know, working on Broadway. So it wasn't until leaving and coming back.
So that's interesting. Where did you study theater in college?
American Musical and Dramatic Academy.
Yes. Okay. So I have a bunch of friends that when you look back on that time, were you like, come on now, Amda? Or were you like, come on, Amda? There were some things I would have changed.
No. It was right in the middle. I was there when the school was in a state of great flux. And it had gone from, it went from being basically just a 2-year conservatory program, which was very, very sort of boutique, to now like an accredited school, a college that, you know, you can get your bachelor's and just everything. And so we were like right in between. We were like in these like little rental studios where like the pipe was busted, and then we were like, oh, now we have to move to they're building our new building, but in the meantime, while they're getting our own building, we're in this like transient moment where we're like in this rental place. We were in like every single semester we were in it, we had a new school. We were like,
this track,
go here now, you wait here. Now, okay, now just wait here. We're building it. We're using your tuition, and we're building this great big thing, and it's going to be fabulous. And then we never got to really see it. So then the people came after us. We're like, Amda's great.
You're like, thanks for paying for this, Peppermint. It's gorgeous.
I'm like, oh.
Oh, you're like, enjoy that. The pipe not bursting while you sing from Candide.
Exactly.
This was Amda in New York City, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then they opened up LA.
Right. They're like fully branching. I went to school here too. And I feel like when you say you went to school or to college in New York City, it's not exactly, you're not going to college.
No, you're taking classes.
Like, you're taking classes. And also, what are we? We're surviving. You're just trying to survive being a young person and then trying to learn about the industry, which like is a whole other conversation. But I think that where I went to school, I had so many great parts of the experience. But one of my biggest gripes and critiques about just theater programs in general, there aren't enough business classes to be like, this is how you make money, this is how you negotiate a contract, these are taxes. Like, I don't think I've told anyone this, that I was in a class with a casting director that I doubt listens to this podcast, that basically, instead of what I thought were more actionable things to do when you graduate college, this casting director literally told us where we could buy cheap produce because we would be so broke. This person told us where we could get week-long free memberships at gyms since we can't afford to pay for a gym membership. And I remember thinking, yes, some of this might be helpful for me, but I also, like, you're only preparing us to be like...
Broke.
Broke. You're preparing us to be unsuccessful broke actors. And I'm like, I'm trying to sort of, get to a level a little higher than that, which is not...
Which restaurants will let you take off work for...
He's like, these are the best places. They won't fire you once you miss 3 shifts in a row. It's
exactly.
Like, okay, but can we talk about how to book a theater job? He's like, okay, you go to El Centro and Hell's Kitchen. Yeah, it's just, I wish I had known more in that sense, but of course, everything is changing. And speaking of that, I want to ask you something. So when you're in Head Over Heels, you're in this Broadway show, was the experience different than you thought it would be being on Broadway, or was it really like, or actually just how did it sort of measure up to what your expectations were?
Well, being in the show, being in a play, I think feels very similar, you know, like doing Tech Week. Anyone who's ever done like a theatrical production, even in high school, you know, like mm-hmm. we always have Tech Week. There's always the series of rehearsals, and like the actual like process of going through a show was very similar for the most part, mm-hmm. you know, so not a lot of that was very foreign to me. What was foreign to me was our out of town, the process of any sense of development that needed to happen for the show.
Right.
So, you know, I didn't work the show, but I was there at our out of town run in San Francisco. So that we had rehearsals for that in New York. Then we went to San Francisco and did the show for like 2 months, 2.5 months, whatever, until the summer, and then came and then went back into rehearsals, and then we had a month of previews, and then we opened in the middle of the summer. And that was harrowing for me because the whole process of like the song you sang yesterday, you know, we took it out. You're not going to sing it today. Instead, put back in the song that we took out and the speech that we just wrote. Do that tonight in 5 minutes.
In front of paying audience members.
Yeah. And you're like, and I was hanging on by a thread. There was one, I'll never forget. I had this one, like there was something new that they gave us. Like we had to go during our break to record some stuff for the show, like was going to play in the theater. Mm-hmm. And we had to go to record that. And then that took like our whole break. So by the time we got back to the theater, they had listened to it, run it, and they said, we're not going to do it. And I was like, well, there was my damn break. And then like, so then we had to rearrange everything we were going to do. We were like, we're not going to do that thing. We're going to do the old thing. Go. And so I was like so flustered, and getting into my costume was a real process. It weighed, I don't know how much it weighed, but it weighed a lot. And there were several layers, corsetry, some stuff you couldn't even see, and corsets and like a shoulder thing, harness, and then the coat that went over that, because I had this like hood that was like sort of suspended, mm-hmm. and it was very heavy. I could barely move that thing. And oh my God, I was so late getting into it because I was just so flustered. And we were like, oh my God, I could hear my entrance music on as I was like a floor below in my dressing room, leaving the dressing room, running. They put the hair on and they like glued as we were walking. I was running up the steps, and the line, they already like, there's like 30 seconds of intro music and speech before my entrance. That was my cue. And usually I'm in place behind the curtain and the door comes up and I'd make an entrance through the door. Well, this time the door came up, I wasn't there, and I just ran in from the side of the thing and was delivering my lines walking on. And I was like, oh.
I'm picturing your cast member's face is like, and here she
they're
is.
Like, they're like, it was crazy. It was very wild.
There's no glamour in theater. It feels like exactly. There's nothing like live theater. That's why there's the magic of it in person. But the more you talk about it, it's like it's such. There's nothing like it. But I feel like for the performers and people, you know, front of house, backstage, it's the least glamorous form of
entertainment.
Art, I find entertainment. Yeah. I think it's such hard work, and like any show I've been a part of like that, it's just, you never think about the things behind the scenes. Even people in high school, I remember being a like 15-year-old freshman and doing my first Tech Week behind the scenes on like the run crew of a show. And I remember thinking, oh my God, when you see a show, you're like, oh, it's a 2-hour show. They just put it together and then it's 2 hours.
They
you
are.
Don't realize exactly. Every step, every costume piece, every tech moment has been like scrutinized to the nth degree. And then not even with a fucking original show where you're out of town changing it. I've never been a part of an original show like that that's been changed so much. And so I'm sure I'll be taking double my Lexapro to get through that. I mean, the anxiety alone.
I don't think I ever want to open originate a role ever again.
Yeah, yeah. Is there? I mean, I understand that it sounds harrowing. Is there a show as Broadway is opening up now? Has there been anything that you've like had your eyes on, or just like have a dream of even like a future revival that you've been wanting to do?
I think I would love to do Chicago. I would love to do Mama Morton. I don't really want to be. I would like to do it because I feel like I could sing it. I don't really think of myself as like a matron. Mm-hmm. But that's a role that I feel like I could do well.
Oh, you would kill. I also want to be fair and tell you, I hate when people ask me that question. And I want to thank you for answering it for me, because it really is just like, where do you see yourself? It's like, whatever. But like, so I want to bring something up to you, Peppermint, because last week on this podcast, we had a guest. It was Gus. He's an amazing comedian who was talking about musicals in high school and how he went to a high school in Brooklyn, actually, that had the opposite problem that a lot of schools across America have, which is that
too many boys. Musical...
Well, oh my God. Can you imagine? No. Although maybe the actual issue is that they were doing Hairspray and they didn't have enough white people for the roles. And so they like had, I think it was Hairspray, they had an Asian guy play Link, and there's like a lyric that's like, and you don't know white from black. And it's like, whatever. First of all, I love this so much. But what I did was, is I posted this to my Instagram story, and because someone had told me that they also had a harrowing experience, which I think, oh yeah, someone told me that they their high school did Once on This Island with all white people. They also did West Side Story and made all the kids playing Puerto Ricans get a spray tan. Yeah. So then I asked, you know, tell me your problematic high school musical story. And I'm just going to tell you the two or three that are really prominent to me. One is that a girl who was white played Kim in Miss Saigon. Another one is that their school did Aida, and they double cast two white girls to play Aida. And then another one was in Alabama, where they did Grease, and a brother and sister duo played Sandy and Danny. and they put hashtag Alabama. I was like, no comment. So what I did was I shared some of these to my story, and I got a response from someone that I'm going to read to you right now. Mm-hmm. This person says, I know everyone is saying that this stuff is cringe, but how is it actually bad? I adore The King and I, West Side Story, etc. They are classic stories and really popular productions for high schools here. Our population is literally 98% white people in Utah. Are we just not supposed to portray diverse stories? There aren't many Danish or German plays for us that accurately reflect our heritage. Peppermint, do you have an opinion? What is your take about, do you think educational theater should be held to different standards when it comes to either race or any sort of difference in what the written script or story suggested? What do you think?
Well, I think when you're dealing with youth theater or high school theater, non-professional theater, you kind of have to take what you're given, right? In terms of the tools that you have, the money, the resources, and so I know that they're limited, you know? And I also know that high schools have a very slim list of things that's approved that they can afford to do. And so I know that I'm actually going to be speaking with some arts teachers in Delaware, which is where I went to high school, about this very thing, mostly about diversity and inclusion in their casting, and also how to stay true and how to honor both the script and the stories, but also the lived experiences and identities of the performers mm-hmm. and the students. And so I think that it's a tough one, but I'm so grateful that these white people are confronted with asking themselves this question. It's mostly white folks. It's not all white folks, but folks in general are asking themselves, is it appropriate that we do this? And what is the best way to do it? I think as long as they're asking that question, that would be great. I don't think, and I don't really know, but I don't think that a lot of high school productions 10, 20 years ago, maybe 20 years ago, were asking themselves, we don't really have, you know, black folks and white folks and to play this. So let's just put it, you know, they were just doing it. I think mm-hmm. I'm sure that they probably chuckled about it. I'm sure they're like, well, this is who we have. So everybody get your brown makeup sticks ready. You know, that's probably just the conclusion that they came to. what I would like to see is a stronger, more concerted effort in casting. Let's get some people involved in theater from the school student body who aren't just in drama class. Maybe there's, you know, that's one of the things we did. We didn't have enough males to play in West Side Story or in Grease. So our drama, because we had like two, and our drama teacher enlisted the high school football team and was like, we need to get you in. And so that's one thing that they did. I'm sure that that's happened plenty of times, but it's not so easy when you're looking for someone who's for maybe a different gender identity or someone of a different race. But I think that as long as they make a really conscious effort to cast it, to be considerate up when casting, and also, it's an opportunity to have a conversation with the students and with the people who are participating, but also with the audience and just the general, whoever's going to be supporting the show. Maybe you can insert a leaflet in the program. Maybe you can say, you know, due to what we had available, we want to do this, and it's important to, you know, we want to nurture art and present this to you, but you should know what we're doing is, it can be seen as problematic. And the only thing we can do is engage in this conversation. And since we can't do it on stage, we're going to do it with you. Maybe you have a talk back after the show and say, look, folks, this is what we had to do. We, you know, as a community, how can we, what can we do to, you know, whatever, I don't know. So I think that would be somewhat healing in those instances.
I think it's brilliant because it doesn't silence the stories themselves, but it actually highlights what's important about the stories while also registering to the public and the people engaging with it. We know what this is and what this looks like, and we are learning from putting this up the way that we can. Because I think you're right that 20 years ago, they definitely were not having these conversations. And I was speaking with someone about this actually earlier today, that they had an all-white production of Once on This Island, which many people messaged me that they also were in. And I think that, and again, it was 10 or 20 years ago. And I think that nowadays, the step forward is that the conversation is being had. And then what you're saying, I think it's the actions you can take to make it right and have people of other races and gender identities feel seen, that you're not just putting up a show and chuckling about, oh, you're like, that's kind of funny way to put that person in that role. Right. And I think that's going to be very interesting to see moving forward of like, A, if that changes the productions that are done, but then B, if it changes how they are done and how people are cast, especially in high school, because that is an age where people are very impressionable. It can actually change how they see the world through the art and the musicals. And also, for one, I would love to see more football players do it in musical theater. Come on now, give me a West Side Story with like a jacked up Tony.
Yeah.
So when you were in high school, do you remember the shows or any shows that you did either in high school or maybe at Amdur that were like kind of jump out to you of shows that really you loved doing?
In high school, I loved I loved doing all the productions. I loved being in high school drama, not specifically for the shows themselves, but because of the community that we were forming. Mm-hmm. And drama club for me was a bit of a safe haven, and you know, and so, and I obviously loved the faculty and staff, the teachers that were involved, and also obviously my friends that were doing it. And so those are the moments that I loved. Of course, we had some really great times. The time that it felt like we were like, I was like, oh, we're really good, was when we did Grease. And because we had, you know, we had the pre-show. We had a pre-show like quartet, barbershop quartet that would sing. We had a car. We had, you know, like we just had, I was like, what, this, we're doing it. This is
come
like,
on budget.
Hello. Yeah. I was like, what's going on here? Our West Side Story was a little like, ooh, you know. But then the next year we did Grease and it was like, oh my goodness. Then the year after that we did Crazy for You. And I was the lead. I wasn't that excited about playing some guy named Bobby, but you know, I really brush up on my tap skills.
I mean,
that was good. But I think the role that I kind of like really came to life in at AMDA was the daddy from Sweet Charity. I really yes. loved being like a cult leader, you know.
Yes. It's so Sweet Charity is, I mean, I remember this is kind of an embarrassing reason why I got into it, but Christina Applegate did the revival on Broadway mm-hmm. and she has a cast recording and I would listen to it. And my first question was like, can't she sing? Then my second question was, do I like the show? And I decided yes for both. I think it's like, yeah, she's so good.
She was a dancer first for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there was drama with her of like, she got injured and then Charlotte d'Amboise, I think, took mm-hmm. over for her at one point.
I saw her in Chicago. Anyway.
Oh yes. So, I mean, just truly an icon. But I think that everyone, I think the thing about theater that I love so much and why it's important to talk about on this podcast actually is that especially queer people, when they're young, there is such a safe haven with that. And that's where mm-hmm. I first felt accepted. And I think that's probably why, A, there's a lot of queer people in the theater business, because it really is full of people that embrace who we are. But I also think there's like also so many queer people do it in high school or just like our allies that are a huge fan of it, because it's just a place that accepts and celebrates how weird we all are. And one person that, to circle back to Head Over Heels, that I'm truly obsessed with is Bonnie Milligan, who I
better
like
be.
Oh my God. I was still either in college or just graduating, and Bonnie was in a show at the Flea Theater, which has had a bunch of drama recently, uh-huh. I think. But like she was in a show with a good friend of mine, and she at the time was like non-union, had, I think it was one of her first shows in New York City, and she came out and sang this song that was like unbelievable. And from that moment on, I'm like been obsessed with her. And of course,
She's ridiculous.
And so one of my questions is, have you seen the video of Bonnie Milligan at her cabaret at 54 Below? She sings a Disney medley with Laura Osnes. Have you seen this before?
Uh-uh.
So she sings this incredible medley, but she also does sing with Laura Osnes, which is, I think is you know, a tough thing. So when I talk about these two people doing the song together and I talk about vaccination, do you feel like this is a topic that we should be glossing over? Or is it interesting to talk about what recently happened?
What? What recently happened?
So Laura Osnes was supposed to do a show or like some out of town thing that was like a one night or two night thing.
How long ago?
Like a month to 2 months. And basically the long story short is
I do know about this. Yeah.
The whole cast had to be vaccinated. And then one of the stars of the show, who is like opposite Laura Osnes, he has children, and he said, hey, just to make sure you've been vaccinated, right? And she basically put out a statement after it was revealed that she wasn't going to get vaccinated.
She said it wasn't because of that.
Right. She basically said that like, she's talked with her doctor and that's what she, and so there's a big outcry towards her with that. And I think she's kind of, it seems to have gone silent since then. And there have been some jokes saying that she's going to be, you know, the next star of the Fox News, the musical, kind of repping.
Well, they're all vaccinated.
That's true.
Even they're vaccinated.
So I'm just like, I think like as Broadway's coming back and it's so important to be back. I mean, I'm literally tonight, my parents just got in town to visit. We're moving out of New York soon. And so it's like their last visit, and we're going to see Wicked tonight, actually, which I'm very excited for.
I'm going to Six this weekend, the opening.
Oh, shut up. I can't. I hear it's so good. I can't wait to hear what you think about Six. But like, you know, I think it's so important, of course, that we just do this as safely as possible. But the Laura Osnes thing is such a bummer, especially when we talk about this community being so accepting. And
no,
like,
it's this. Listen, the thing that has the thing, I don't want to say it hasn't like flabbergasted me the most, but I guess I really did assume that living in New York and living in these communities that I assumed that, I think rightly so, that these communities are all interconnected, the queer community, the theater community, so on and so forth, which mm-hmm. they obviously are. They overlap. But I had assumed that in these spaces, that like in the gay club, in the bar, in whatever, in the theater show, whatever, that we were all very like-minded. And I think socially, I even thought, socially that we were very, very like-minded. And so to find out in the past 2 years that many of my, let's just put it this way, I don't have a lot of personal, like when Trump got elected in 2016 and before, during the campaigning of all that, I did not have a lot of, I had no family that I was worried was going to vote for Trump. And I didn't have a lot of friends that I was like, honey, look, we're this, I knew that it was happening. I knew that I had friends whose family members, they had to go home and fight at Thanksgiving, but I didn't. So I was like, I just don't know what that's like. And I still don't know what it's like to have the family members do it. But I will tell you, it is, has been a surprise in the past several few years to find out that there are people who, A, I either worked with at the club, who were also, you know, other drag performers and gay folks and go-go dancers or whatever, managers of the bar, whatever, or other actors who have come out at, not come out, but expressed finally being open about being conservative, Trump supporters, whatever. And okay, fine. But then on top of that, it seems to connect with their hesitation for wanting to take the vaccine and other issues. And so I've noticed an outspokenness, which has been interesting to say the least. I have to stop myself from unfollowing those people. I'm not going to, like, I haven't arrived at the point yet where I just need to unilaterally cut everyone off. But I like to engage in conversations with these types of people. But when it comes to, like, work and should we be vaccinated or not, I do believe that getting vaccinated is a personal choice, but I do think that there's, like anything else, consequences and repercussions to making either of those choices. And it turns out that one of the repercussions or consequences to not being vaccinated is not being able to go and be around people who in groups.
And you can't do the job that you want to do. And unfortunately, if you're putting someone else and their family at risk, then it's like, that's what I can't.
I just think it's really interesting because, you know, when I remember hearing the conversation about AIDS and HIV, not only even just past the, if you can't come in this room if you have AIDS or HIV because you might spread it, that ignorance, not only that, but also the, you know, the people who were very, had fervent beliefs about, you know, if you have AIDS or HIV, you better tell everyone in you're around, because if we accidentally have sex with you or whatever, then you're endangering us. Now, that's a different conversation, but it's really interesting that they can see that as a reason for, you know, notification and talking about and consent and all those things. But, you know, and you want to protect yourself and you want everybody. I don't want somebody with HIV in my children's class, you know, like that conversation. Whereas, and I have a hard time not believing that those are the same people. I don't know that they are, but I have a hard time not believing that those are the same people.
Peppermint, that is so spot on, because it's all about like, well, wait a minute. If one thing is their own personal rights, then the other thing is like, if you think that if you're going to get, you know, accidentally attacked sexually by a HIV positive person, or even about trans rights, where it's like people saying that they're trying to protect their children, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, then if we're trying to protect our children with a vaccine, it's not the same thing. You're bending every single rule
just to accommodate only yourself. And I guess they might say the exact same thing, you know, for everyone else, where you're like, oh, you're you know, you're pro-choice only when it comes to this, or not, reproductive rights, but not when it comes to vaccine. Oh, I see. I know that there's people that are out there, but we're talking about a public health issue. Public health issues are communicable situations where you have to follow certain public health guidelines. You just do. And I think that we have forgotten that there's a whole series of vaccines that we have to go through to be around other people in public and do all the things, to work at certain places and all of these things. And I know that people are really upset about losing work. There's a dancer, a Janet Jackson dancer named Teresa Espinosa, who I really like only because she was a Janet Jackson dancer. And, you know, she's very outspoken about you know, you're all a bunch of sheep. The vaccine doesn't work. Also, vaccine doesn't work, but also masks don't work. Somehow that's connected. Okay. And, you know, I have natural immunity because I had it, and I, you know, I don't have to do it. I'm like, girl, okay, fine. But why, like, don't, that's for you. And if it's individual, great. But like, it just seems so counterproductive if you're not, if you're going to in one breath say, I'm following my own, you know, freedoms, but at the same time, not adhering to any of the other protocols, like none of it. I don't, I believe in natural immunity. I had it. No one's dying from it. I don't want a vaccine and I'm not wearing a mask. Don't tell me what to do. And I'm going to work anywhere I want, but you better not come in here with your HIV. What? Okay.
What? I mean, it's also with all due respect, you think that you know better than the top scientists of the country and the many, many millions of people who have gotten the vaccines and wore the masks. Okay. And like, listen, you are a very talented person. All these people who I'm sure have so great qualities.
That has nothing to do with it. Jackson. Yes, girl, I'll listen to your CD.
Right. I'm not going to listen to your science advice.
Yeah, that's it. And let's not work. Let's figure out another way that we can safely work together. And until they do, then we can't work together. And if the Absolutely. And if the situation were everyone who's vaccinated needs to not be around, you know, like if you're vaccinated, you can't work here. Mm-hmm. I guess I would have to find another job. Yeah, but that's kind of backwards, obviously, because if you're vaccinated, then you're not, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, it's just so much to weigh, and just to, especially like it's good that we're open to having conversation with people, mm-hmm. because I think if we only cut them out, then it's just you're letting them then spread their own stuff with. Anyways, I do want to ask as we're moving forward, because this podcast loves to talk about like early inspirations mm-hmm. and our queerness and embracing ourselves. And I want to ask you, like, when you were growing up, is there anything in the world that like you connected with in a way that was like that I know I'm a part of this queer world or like I'm different? Like, was there anything to you that whether it was like a movie or like an actor or like anything that even like a musical, anything that jumped out at you?
There really wasn't, you know, I mean, I knew the feelings that I had in my own body and mm-hmm. I knew that I like, it was very apparent probably to everybody that I was really like super femme and very like into the shiny things.
Sure.
But that could be for anybody, right? And so, but that was for me my biggest signifier. Mm-hmm. I mean, I certainly knew that there was something about Richard Simmons that was like similar vibe, but very different.
I want to point out that your eye acting in that moment was just so deserves an award. I mean, Richard Simmons is a great answer. I think all of us at one point connected with Richard Simmons. As we're kind of getting into now the future of talking about, you know, we're talking about theater and musicals and these high schools doing these shows. I'm curious, as you're looking as Drag Race is continuing, and it's like, I mean, I feel like it keeps getting to a point where you think it's not going to get any bigger, and it continues to. It's still winning these Emmys. It's just like all of these different incarnations of it around the world. When you hear I've heard people say their critique recently that they feel like the show is becoming too either commercial or mainstream or glossy, whatever they think it is. Do you feel that way, that there's a downside to it becoming like a global phenomenon, or what is your take on it?
There's ups and downs to all these things. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest downside, if there's a downside, I think one of the things that's unfortunate that we have to try to watch a little bit is the pressure that's put on the contestants, the pressure that they feel to spend a lot of money to go on the show, because there was a moment in time when it was really about how much can you create, like who can create the best look out of nothing or
all
whatever.
All the design challenges, yeah.
And now that's really not the case. It's like, who can purchase the best outfit for the most amount of money that fits within the theme?
I think that's why it was so impressive that Raja did so unbelievably well this past season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's different for All Stars. That was All Stars. It is a different mm-hmm. game for the... You know, when you are doing All Stars, you're coming in having had a little bit of exposure to the money and everything that can come through with it. And so naturally you're going to have some connections and have some conversations with designers. But, and even those girls need to spend a lot of money, but like the original season girls who were working at a bar, you know, me before I went on the show, period, I had to borrow $20,000 to get costumes made to do it. No one told me I had to do that, but that's in order to bring all of the outfits that they were asking for and knowing the type of things that we're seeing on the show, that's what I was doing. You know, each outfit's costing $2,000-$3,000, and you're bringing like 20 outfits, you know?
Wow. Do you, when you look back on your time on the show and that investment you put in before, do you feel like that money and that was, you would have done it the same way? You thought that was worth it spending it? Or do you think you would have done anything different?
I mean, you know, I just kind of threw everything at the wall and see what's stick, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I probably wouldn't do it any other way again. But, you know, if I were to go back to like an All-Stars, I would certainly be a little more discriminating with my money.
I mean, I can't imagine the pressure before you're going on a show. And especially the girls this past season that like going through the pandemic and also knowing that you couldn't really perform live and then to just go straight. It's just an amount of pressure that it clearly we're getting some amazing queens out of it. But yeah, I agree with you that I can't imagine that pressure. But I will say that there is a lot of pressure on this podcast for me to ask one question that is really kind of a revealing question. Peppermint, when I ask you that if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would we answer?
Do they have to be alive?
No. We can bring back from the dead.
It would either be Lily Tomlin or Lucille Ball.
Oh, yes. These are great answers. So one living, one dead. Lily Tomlin, just a queer icon. But also Lucille Ball, when you hear that Nicole Kidman is doing the movie of Lucille Ball, we're giving a shaken head right now. Peppermint, do we think it's going to be good?
I mean, I think it will be well acted. I do think Nicole Kidman clearly is an accomplished actress. Mm-hmm. So I think Nicole's will take it seriously. I think Nicole will take it seriously.
You know, like when you see a friend in a show and the show is really bad, and then like you're like, what do you say to that person? And you say, you did it. The costumes, the lights. Mm-hmm. You were up there. You're never saying anything. Nicole's really going to take it seriously. And she's going to, you know, say the lines.
She'll probably look. I mean, I think of her as being so tall and lanky that it doesn't seem like the right thing, but I'm sure that they're going to spend whatever they have to spend to get the look right. And so, you know, I think the question will be, will the sum be greater than, will it be greater than the sum of its parts? You know, that's the question.
Damn, that is the question. It's so interesting, especially with casting these days. I mean, there was an article that came out recently about Catherine Hahn was cast as, oh shit, I'm blanking. There's like, I'm sure people listening are going to be screaming when they know, because it's like Catherine Hahn was recently cast as a character that is Jewish. And there's been some articles coming out, and like Sarah Silverman was saying that there's been kind of a, oh, she's playing Joan Rivers. That's who it is. Catherine Hahn is playing
Joan Rivers.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Joan Rivers. And there's an article about why won't Hollywood let Jewish actresses play Jewish women? And there's, you know, Catherine Hahn, who also is in Transparent as plays a rabbi. She's not Jewish. In Shiva Baby, which is literally about like sitting Shiva after a person has died in the Jewish community. There
is she in that too?
Rachel Sennott is actually, so this comedian Rachel Sennott, who's so good, she plays the lead of it, and she is not Jewish, but does a really good job. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was played by Felicity Jones, who is not Jewish. And then there's one more. Oh, Rachel Brosnahan, Mrs. Maisel. And it's like, I think Sarah Silverman said something that I get the argument here, and I am a Jewish person. So like, I want the representation. Also, when it comes to gay characters, of course, I would love for queer actors to play those. But Sarah Silverman's like, is this the top priority of the list of things?
I think it depends.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think it would have been, it would not have served the piece well to cast somebody who wasn't Jewish in that miniseries Unorthodox. For, you know,
right.
It would not have, I don't great even know series. How that would have worked. Right. But if you're talking about like someone who, you know, the story itself, them being Jewish is not centered, their experiences as someone who's Jewish is not, are not centered, you know, maybe them being Jewish and their experience being Jewish may not outrank the other experiences that this person has and is living through. I don't really know. Like, it is really difficult. I'm not Jewish, so it's not my place to say. But I certainly can see the value of having someone who does have these experiences line up. I do right. think we don't necessarily need to cut to the shortcut and saying only this person can play this, you know, only people who have this experience can play these period people, period. I don't know. Right. I know that's the sort of litmus test, but the bigger picture of it for me is, are we putting someone in the role who doesn't have a reverence for exactly what's happening, who doesn't really have a good understanding of exactly what's happening, and doesn't have respect for the larger picture here?
Definitely.
You know, when Jared Leto did a wonderful job in Dallas Buyers Club, but the fact that when he was in an interview and someone asks us, what's it like to be a transgender woman? And he was like, oh, there's no room in the pantyhose for my balls.
Meanwhile,
we're getting murdered in the streets.
No.
That is why, you know, if Jared had just had I don't know what Jared did. There was some consultants working on the film. But if Jared had had more, I believe that if Jared had a deeper understanding and empathy for the trans community at that time, then that would not have come out of his mouth. And what we want is an actor who at least has a reverence and an empathy for what they're getting into. And so I think that's what we should be looking for.
I'm really not buttering your biscuit. You are by far one of the most amazing people I've ever spoken with. It's just, you're so right. It's just, you can't just say only certain people are going to play the roles, but I think that especially the women that I just brought up have played these roles. I would like to think that Rachel Brosnahan and Mrs. Maisel, she does such an amazing job. She did her work. She brings it to life in such a great way. And so I understand the frustration because it is a very Jewish show. Mm-hmm. And I understand, especially and as a Jewish person, that's like, if you're watching someone that's like mispronouncing prayers and like, it's like I do think that Rachel really put the work in, and in my mind, Catherine Hahn can do no wrong. And so have at it, girl. But there is another part of this podcast before we say goodbye that I really want to have a brief conversation with you about, which is Whoopi Goldberg has done so many films. What do you think is the best Whoopi film? Peppermint, what do you answer?
I really loved Clara's Heart.
Oh, no one's answered this before. Wait, I haven't seen this one and I'm devastated to admit that to you, but I have to be honest on this podcast because Whoopi, Clara's Heart. 1988 film based on a novel, stars Whoopi Goldberg. And what? Neil Patrick Harris in his debut role.
Yes, it was his debut role and it was a very adult, you know, themed.
Yeah.
It's a drama, you know.
Wow.
And it's very...
Oh, I can't wait to watch this.
It's a very dramatic moment for Whoopi. Now, obviously, The Color Purple is mm-hmm. you know, seminal. And you can't forget those 80s comedies. Jumpin' Jack Flash, I think, is amazing. But yeah, Clara's Heart was like one that I was like, oh.
Thank you for bringing this up because I had never seen this one and I'm definitely going to be watching this. I need a good drama. And of course, Whoopi there. So last week we talked about Sister Act and Sister Act 2 because our guest Gus talked about how he heard that the second movie was actually not written to be a sequel for Sister Act. It was a separate thing that they kind of forced in, which I'm not 100% sure that, I mean, the accuracy, I'm sure parts of it are, but you know that Bette Midler was originally offered the role. Mm-hmm. And so basically what I read is that she regretted not taking the movie. I think she said, I wrote her quote down. She goes, my husband never lets me forget like the mistakes I made. She says, Bette Midler says, there was Sister Act, which was written for me, but I said, my fans don't want to see me in a wimple. I don't know where I got that from. Why would I say such a thing? So Whoopi did it instead. And of course, she made a fortune. So I find it interesting that what I read is that Whoopi Goldberg was then put on the show, or put on the movie Sister Act, and then like 2 weeks later, they went into production. And Carrie Fisher did rewrites for the screenplay, and that then the film writer, he wanted to put a pseudonym on his name because he felt like it wasn't his script anymore. But do you think between Sister Act and Sister Act 2, you have a favorite between those two?
I like the story of Sister Act 1 better because I really think it highlights Whoopi and the story of this like Vegas showgirl lady, which I think is so fun. But I like the music from part 2 better, obviously.
Obviously. I respect that answer.
And
that,
you know, take off your robes.
Your teacher says take off your robes.
What? Why? I don't know. Just take off. Your teacher says take off.
I don't know. Just take off your robes.
It's That's time like to the, join the it's chorus. So funny. That is like the best like prelude to a number ever, you know?
I don't know. Just take off your robes.
I don't know.
And then I'm like, of course you watch the number and they're doing full like cartwheels.
Yeah. Like what? How are they supposed to do? Were they going to do that in that robes? They weren't going to do that in that robe.
Those robes would not have helped on those cartwheels. Well, Peppermint, I want to thank you so much for coming on That's a Gay Ass podcast. This Absolutely. Really meant the world to me. It was such a great conversation. Yes. And I cannot wait to see the next amazing things you do. And thank you so much.
Absolutely. You don't have to wait too long because I have a new show coming out. It's called Call Me Mother. It's a drag reality competition on Out TV, but it'll be available everywhere on Out. It's called Out TV. You can get it on Apple TV, Apple Plus, whatever. And then Amazon and Roku and all your streaming places.
Yes, it sounds so incredible. Definitely going to be linking that in the show notes with all your information, socials. And I cannot wait for that to come out and to continue to support the most iconic, amazing person, Peppermint. You're a star, truly. Massage that neck, girl, because you just were bopping it up and down for this episode with Miss Peppermint. I want to thank Peppermint for being here, and make sure you follow her social media and tag her to let you know you listened to this episode. It really helps get the word out as well. I will also say, speaking of getting that word out, we have that Instagram going. It is @gayasspodcast, and follow me on TikTok as well. Why the fuck not? I want to tell you that this is just a crazy time in my life, and so I will be taking off 1 or 2 weeks from the podcast. I'm going to let you know exactly when that is, but stay tuned on my social media, definitely my Instagram, to hear about that, just because I'm trying to make this all happen and, you know, not make my SSRIs work too hard, because hello, is this thing on? Have a great rest of your week. Stay gay, my girlies, my gap tooth bitches, and we will see you soon. Bye.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.